Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Chris Wasser, Jean Smullen and Russell Alford are here for Movies and Booze. Good afternoon
to
you all. So Jean, I see one of them is a fizzy one.
Cremant, yes.
From the looks of it.
And it's Sipac from Alsace. And Cremant is now really starting to gain a bit of traction. People are getting sick of Prosecco, so it's a little bit more expensive, but it's a lot more interesting. So we're looking at a really good Cremant from Alsace.
Now, is there a difference between a Cremant and a and any other sparkling wine?
Cremant is made in the same way as champagne, but they can't call it champagne.
Yes, only of course.
So basically, it's the second fermentation takes place in the bottle.
Yeah.
And so it is mostly like Alsace, the Loire, Burgundy, and you know, you've Cremant d'Alsace, Cremant Loire, and you know, it's the sparkling wine, but the quality is really good. And usually in a price point, it's not that expensive, you know, so it offers great value and you get that lovely acidity and the brioche notes and everything. So, very interesting.
Yeah.
And definitely if you want to really push out the boat and you're having a bit of a party and you want to just, you know, not another bloody bottle of Prosecco, go for a Cremant.
Okay, right. And the other one?
New Zealand Sauvignon. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the statistics that came out earlier on this week about, you know, how actually we're all drinking an awful lot less than people think we are. And I want to talk about that a little bit. And then what are we drinking? And really, the you know, head and shoulders above everything else is New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. And there's yet another new one come on the market. And I still, I mean, I've been working with New Zealand wine this year is my 27th year. And yet there's still new New Zealand Sauvignons coming on the market. Why? Because people want to drink them.
Well, no, that's true. But there must be a group of people that they now employ full time to come up with new novel names for the wine.
Because
they exhausted all the bay, cloudy sky, sea ones.
This is called Alpine Rift. Yeah. Right. And the guy who's a Kiwi winemaker, he's calling himself the Marlborist. So it's kind of, it's a bit funky.
You know, I saw one yesterday that was named after Massey Ferguson tractors.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
So that's a good farmer one there.
They know their market. That's a shoo-in for them. Yeah.
Massey is classy, as you seem to say. So, our two movies.
Terrible superhero names. Our two movies are very different from one another. Tornado, which is a Scottish revenge samurai western.
I love that.
There's a lot going on in there. Tim Roth is in there acting particularly grumpy. Jack Loudon, who people might know as Mr. Saoirse Ronan, who's very, very good in Slow Horses, he is in there too. And a Dubliner, Robbie Ryan, is the man behind the camera. And the second film also has some Irish interest. Donald Gleeson and Fiona Shaw are in it. It's Echo Valley, which is a thriller. You know what I was thinking? Actually, the last time I was in here, I was reviewing Hallow Road. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
And for anyone who doesn't remember, you probably don't, it's about a mother and father who receive a panic call from their daughter in the middle of the night.
And it's all shot inside the car, most of it anyway.
And she has this extraordinarily tricky problem, let's say, that she needs help with. This is sort of in the same wheelhouse. It's a daughter arriving home who's not having the best time of it and says to her mother, I've done something and I need help. And Julianne Moore is a mother who will go to the ends of the earth to protect her daughter. Unfortunately, the problem that the daughter has in this film is way worse. So we'll get to that.
All right. Okay. But can you tell us what the problem is this time?
Because I can. I'm going to give it away.
Great.
I remember last time it was too secretive, but no.
Total spoilers. Nothing but spoilers. All right. So Pedro Pascal is now the favourite to be James Bond.
James Bond's villain, that is.
He's not going to be James Bond.
No. I swear every week, every day, there seems to be, I don't know if you've been rumoured yet to play James Bond.
Several times.
So we've moved on from trying to guess who will be the next Bond to going into villain territory now. And obviously Pedro Pascal, hugely popular from The Last of Us, Gladiator 2. He is now a 4-1 favourite to become the next villain, beating the likes of Cillian Murphy at the moment. His fame at the moment is huge because of The Last of Us. He's a very popular actor, very memeable as well, and I think his currency at the moment is really strong. So who knows? It would be a good choice, but again, this cycle that we're going on when it comes to Bond, just give us some information, for goodness sake.
Well, I think they can't give information because they don't know themselves.
No, exactly. So it just fuels the rumour mill non-stop constantly. So this will just continue on. Probably next week I'll have another person to rumour, but we will see.
You see, I can't see it really. I don't think it'd be a good move for him. Really. Has he ever played a baddie in anything?
Game of Thrones. Well, he was sort of a baddie. You didn't want to see him die, especially not in the way that he did in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of everybody was a sort of...
Yeah,
was morally
sort of
ambiguous
yeah,
in Game
yeah,
of Thrones.
There were no redeemable characters in Game of Thrones, yeah.
That wasn't that clear. Yeah, I don't know. I think for his band, because he's just so hot right now, that and there seems to be kind of like a huge sway that people that just adore him.
In every anything he does, it's like, oh, you know, people, as I say, he's very memeable at the moment. Online, there's a whole fandom that surrounds Pedro Pascal just on his appearance, just because people very much like him physically in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But his talent is also there too. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
It's funny, he's Chilean. And actually, for years, I worked with Wines of Chile, and they were always trying to find something that would give them some identity, you know? And finally,
at long last,
the movie star does it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but he's American though, essentially. He was born there, I think.
No, but
he's
born in Chile. Yeah. It's Chilean. He was born there, he's Chilean.
Yeah.
I don't think it would do him any harm to maybe disappear for a while after Fantastic Four. And far be it from me to tell working actors to not do their job. But he's had maybe two or three independent features this year. He had Gladiator 2, The Last of Us. He still has the Fantastic Four film to come out.
Yeah.
It's kind of Pascal overdrive
Pedro,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit of a break probably wouldn't hurt his career. And then to come back as a Bond villain, obviously, because he's definitely going to do that.
Do you think so?
No.
Screw the odds.
Yeah, no, but it would be an idea to go away, maybe have a bit of a think.
Maybe have a bit of a think about what he wants to do next, yeah.
Get
yeah.
money.
Has anyone made a shout for Colin Farrell as the new James Bond? I think he'd be really good and interesting in the role, says the texter.
He would, yeah, but like 15 years ago.
Yeah,
well, no offense to Colin, but I think the only way forward for the Bond franchise now is to go younger. Do Bond's younger years. Do him in training. Maybe his Navy years, something a little bit like that. We've had the older Bond, we've had the frazzled Bond, we've had the grumpy Bond. Give us the younger Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you think
sense.
That's what
yeah.
they're going to do?
I think that's probably what they're going to do, yeah. And it means as well, if you lock in a young actor, go for an unknown. If you lock in a young actor, you'll have them for maybe 10 or 15 years.
When Bond actually arrives, will it be a movie or will it just be a straight to Amazon?
It could be a reality show at this point. Yeah, I'm not sure. There might be some deal where it'll be in cinemas.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It moved to Disney Plus, isn't that? Or Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon.
Amazon. And so there's every chance it could become a live TV spectacular for all we know. You never know the way the streamers go. But
Interactive,
yeah. You decide his fate.
Yeah.
Oh, no, A, so, vote B.
All right. Because I thought, like, they'll do all those horrible spin-off things. But, but they mightn't actually just do a go-to-the-pictures movie. Mightn't be worth their while to
No,
do.
Maybe not. No. It'll be like Rian Johnson giving out about the fact that the Knives Out films aren't allowed to go to cinemas. You sold it to Netflix. What did you think
what
is going to happen?
Expecting?
You know, yeah. It might be a little bit like that.
Somebody says Patrick Stewart is the name Bond. We haven't had the really, really old Bond yet.
Emphasis on really, really.
That would be that would be interesting. The names I can't remember. Actually, Patrick Stewart wasn't bad there. Mr. Blobby apparently is to be the new James Bond, says John. Thanks for that breaking news, John. And David Williams is a Nazi. Maybe a bit of an oversimplification
you
there.
You just looked at a couple of words, put it together and hope for the best there. So David Williams, who's no stranger to controversy these days in the showbiz world, he was, they're filming Christmas specials of TV shows right now, would you believe, in TV land. So the TV series Would I Lie to You, which is a very popular show on BBC One, they were filming over the week. And during one of the segments, one of the other guests, as part of the panel, was explaining how they injured their wrist while they were waving. Lots of W's there, very difficult for me. And Williams then therefore decided to essentially do a Nazi salute while in the studio with cameras and an audience, which is not really acceptable in any way, shape or form. The BBC have said that it's completely unacceptable. The segment would not air. It's been reported very heavily because there was a radio producer in the audience, so, and they verified it with members of the audience. Of course, David Williams also was kicked off BGT, Britain's Got Talent, because there was evidence of him making comments, rude comments about various contestants and their appearances. So, you know, if he's releasing kids' books, fine. That seems to be good. he's just constantly embroiling himself in controversy over on the other side of things.
Okay, and has William said anything about that, such as, I'm sorry?
I haven't heard anything yet. The BBC has done most of the speaking in this particular case, saying, as I say, it's unacceptable and we apologise to all at the recording for the offence caused. But he has not said anything yet.
Okay, but if they've only taken out the segment, that means they'll still be screening this Christmas special with Williams in it.
Yes.
No Nazi Williams is going to be in there.
Taking out that bit, yes.
Taking out that. Well, yeah. Leap over is
They'd
more.
Have to go into the canteen and hope there's another comedian of a similar ilk maybe hanging around that they could have replaced in another episode. But, you know, production skills.
Oh dear. Right, dear. So let's have our first drink.
All right, we're going to go in. And funny enough, yesterday, and I know Russell was at it, I was at Taste of Dublin, and I went to a masterclass that Antonio Dominguez gave, and she was showing a Kreml. And she actually, statistics I didn't know, she mentioned when she was making her presentation that the sales of Cremant in the Irish market have gone up by 25% in the last year. So that's kind of showing the interest that people have in this, right? So so I said to her, well, I'm bang on trend then with this one. This is called Sipmac, M-A-C-K, Sip, Extra Brut. It's a Cremant d'Alsace and... Alsace is, it's west of Paris. You've got the Vosges Mountains on one side. It's probably one of the driest regions in France because the weather fronts come over and they dump all the rain on one side. So the other side is relatively dry. Here you get...
Alsace used to belong.
Yeah, it's
France
a bit
now.
German. It's history.
Speaking
it's been
of
French,
Nazis.
It's been German.
David William visits quite regularly, apparently.
And in fact, during the Second World War, it was the Germans' great organisation that managed to save a lot of the wineries in the area. But going back 500, 600 years, they were always... it was French and it was German, it was French and it was German. But what you have here are cool climate grapes, and it's the only red grape in the area is Pinot Noir. So it's Riesling, Pinot Gris, Sylvaner. They're all these very kind of delicate white grapes that you that grow in the area. Now, this particular wine, the Sipmat family, they've been making wine since... 1698, so they kind of know what they're doing. But Sipmac was founded in 1959 when Francois Sip married Marie-Louise Mac. And, it's a family estate and it's really, really premium. Now, this is available in Mitchell & Son and they have four shops. They've got their new shop in the old Harcourt Street Railway there up at Hatch Street. They're in Glasthoole. They've got two shops, Avoca in Kilmechanic and Avoca in Dunboyne. So you'll get it in all of these shops. So what makes this so special? It's actually made from Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. So in Champagne, the two grapes that they use to make Champagne are Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. But the difference with this one is that they have Pinot Blanc in it. So where do the bubbles come from? Well, in a nutshell, the fermentation takes a place in the bottle, which is a relatively small vessel. And they add some dosage, some sweet old wine. They add more yeast. The yeast consumes whatever the extra sugar is and then leaves the lees, the dead yeast cells in the bottle. And the byproduct of the alcoholic fermentation is CO2 or bubbles. So that's where all the delightful bubbles come from when fermentation takes place in the bottle. And bottle fermented sparkling wine is really, so in terms of quality, it's really the only game in town. You've got Cava, which is the very famous Spanish bottle fermented sparkling wine. You've got champagne, obviously, and then all the various Cremants. So have a little taste of this. This is extra brut, and that's the driest style. That means it's got the least amount of sugar possible. This has literally about 0.6 grams of residual sugar. So it's a bone dry wine. So if you're watching your sugar intake, this is, seriously, there's very, very little sugar in this particular wine. It's extra brut. What I loved about it, this gorgeous white floral aromas, hint of biscuit. And then when you taste it, you get a lovely fresh acidity, but kind of hint of tropical fruit. It's a little bit more interesting. There's a lot going on in the pot. It's very elegant, a fresh finish, And if you've got any celebrations coming up, and, you know, we're in wedding season, various things, it's, you know, people are finishing exams, people want, you know, summertime, like, we want to go out and celebrate. This is a great wine to do it with.
Except the people finishing the exams have to be over 18.
Oh, of course.
I just wanted to point that out. It seems less fizzy to my Bulgarian palate.
And you got the posh glass.
I got the posh glass. No, but I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because often a lot of Proseccos, you just feel it go up your nose rather than you can taste it.
But don't forget that the fermentation takes place in a tank. In Prosecco, so it's a completely different fermentation process. Here it's in the bottle, and you get those lovely, delicate, fine bubbles in the bottle fermented sparkling wines.
Yeah. One person says Strasbourg is the capital of Alsace. It's the best Cremant, as it's the nearest to Champagne.
Strasbourg,
Russell
it is.
Was not nodding.
Yeah. Yes, and I mean, it's literally on the border. Colmar is actually the sort of the main area for, is the main town where, you know, where all the wine kind of revolves around Colmar more than Strasbourg. But I mean, it's like there's all these Hansel and Gretel houses. The food is unbelievable. And I mean, I've been lucky enough to visit Alsace a couple of times. And every time I've been there, it's just been like the most amazing experience. Particularly the Rieslings are like, they have all these Grand Cru vineyard sites. They are unbelievable. And you're looking at really top quality Riesling. Alsatian Riesling is just unbelievable. But nobody drinks it. It's one of the greatest fine wines in the world and nobody drinks it.
Except
and it's very hard
assume.
To... Yeah. Well, they drink it a lot, yeah, obviously in France. But we don't see that much of it here on this market, which is such a pity because it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Going back to James Bond, surely it'll be Timothy Chalamet as the new Bond. He plays everybody else. Yeah, that's a fair point. And someone else says there was a James Bond Jr. animated series in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. The theme tune just came back in my head. James Bond Jr.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. I just remembered a title.
Well, I wish we could just like take that and meme it for do some sort of audio meme. And David says Pedro Pascal played a bad guy in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
He did.
Well, he was a good guy, but he got turned into a vampire. Then Buffy had to slay him.
Yeah.
So he kind of was a bad guy.
Yeah, the first episode of season 4 of my Buffy knowledge is coming in handy.
Whoa,
here. Yeah.
My God, that and James Bond Jr.
The 90s are just
big day for
up.
Me.
Yes.
He's in it for like 5 minutes and then he gets turned into a vamp and then Buffy has to dust him later on.
And that is that his first screen thing?
Yeah, it was one of the first. Like, I think he was struggling to get a gig at the time. But yeah, it's a very small part.
But he must have been 20 or something.
Yeah, I'd say he was probably in his early 20s. Like, I watched it there recently enough. I need to stop talking now. he's almost unrecognizable in it. I think we've gotten used to him being kind of, you know, the muscular version of Pedro Pascal, the beard, very well groomed. But he's just a kid in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has like serious cheekbones though when he was much younger.
Oh yeah. They're actually quite noticeable, yeah.
You could
cut
cheese with them.
You could.
Really. So what movie would you like to do first?
Buffy.
Sorry.
We're going with Echo Valley first.
Okay, yeah. Echo Valley coming up after this.
Hello, sweetheart. How you doing? I didn't realize you grew up all the way out here. Man, horses and green grass. It's beautiful.
How'd you find me out here, Jackie?
You know, for the life of me, I do not understand what you see in him. Because I see the way you look at me.
I don't look at you anyway, Jackie.
No?
No.
There you go. That's Echo Valley. That sounded quite low-key, that particular clip.
It did, actually, yeah. That's Donald Gleeson there playing the baddie, Jackie, and enjoying himself playing the baddie. He hasn't had a chance to do that in a while. So I mentioned earlier that it's about a daughter returning home to her mom or calling up in the middle of the night and saying that she has this very bad problem that she needs help with. I'll tell you what the problem is, but first of all, I'll tell you more about Julianne Moore's character, Kate, who is a grieving widow. She lost her wife, Patty, just 9 months ago in an accident. They ran a horse farm and trained horses and trained future jockeys together, and then tragedy struck. And to make matters more complicated, the whole place is just, it's literally falling down around Kate. Like, the roof is about to cave in. Kate hasn't got the money because she isn't working properly to fix the house. So first she goes to her ex-husband, played by Colin McLaughlin, who is only in this thing for 3 or 4 minutes. And really, everything could use a bit more Kyle MacLachlan, including this film. And he is the wealthy ex-husband who agrees to help with the house, but he doesn't like Kate's parenting abilities when it comes to their daughter, Claire, played by Sydney Sweeney, because their daughter is a drug addict and they have paid for so many rehabs stints. But none of them have worked, you know. And he thinks that they shouldn't be helping Claire because Claire's not really helping herself or doesn't really want to be helped. Mm. So he's ready to turn his back on the daughter, but Kate will never do that. And when Claire does arrive home in an awful state one day, she looks after her. So it looks as though, you know, look, the money is there to fix the house. You know, Claire and Kate might be able to mend their relationship. It looks as if everything might be okay for a minute. But first of all, Jackie, who's a drug dealer that Claire might owe money to, he starts knocking about the place and calling over unannounced. And then one night, Claire, after being out for a few hours, arrives home, soaking wet, in the middle of a rainstorm. She's got blood in her shirt. Mom answers the door and she says to her mom, "I need help." And "What do you need help with, darling?" She says, "There's a body in the back of the car." And she goes out to the car and there is a body wrapped up in the back of the car. Very well wrapped up, actually.
Okay, well, that's points for that.
I mean, you know something's actually gone wrong. I'll get to this, but you know something's gone wrong with a film when you find yourself kind of going, "That's a little too well wrapped up. Where did she learn to do this?" Yeah. So we don't know whose body it is. It's not Jackie's, I will say, because
Is that Donald Gleason as a drug dealer?
It's not Donald Gleason. Oh. Yeah, Donald Gleason's a drug dealer, but it's not Donald Gleason's body.
Right, because
he becomes an even bigger problem in the second half. But instead of calling the police, Kate decides that she will phone a friend, Fiona Shaw, and she will visit the lake. And I probably don't need to tell you what's going to happen next.
Has Fiona Shaw got a particular skill set that suits this kind of situation?
She's the big limo of the piece. Yeah. She is not. She's just a neighbor and a pal, someone who's there. She is by far the best thing about this film. I think it actually needed more of her. I wish the whole thing kind of revolved around her. She plays the sort of friend who will do anything for you. Like, Kate is calling up Fiona Shaw and saying, "You know, I'm depressed over my wife's death." Grant, Fiona Shaw's there on the doorstep with wine, ready to work with her. She calls her up in the middle of the night and says, "You know, my daughter's accidentally killed someone. I need help hiding the body." Grant, Fiona Shaw's there.
That's a friend.
Doesn't ask any
That's
questions.
The kind of friend you
what?
Want.
A pal. Better Call Shaw. That should be a film. Look, it's a promising setup. There's an accomplished team of filmmakers behind this thing. Ridley Scott produces. We've got Brad Inglesby, who created Mare of Easttown. Michael Pierce, talented film director. Brilliant cast, as I say, Colin McLaughlin is also in there. It just kind of loses its head about an hour in. I love that setup and I love the idea of a mother trying to mend this broken relationship with her daughter, and, you know, she'll go to the ends of the earth, as I say, for her. But Sydney Sweeney disappears from it in the second half, which is a big mistake. I do think her range is a little bit tested here, but when she disappears, you do lose the mother-daughter thing. Mm, and then all of a sudden it just becomes the Julianne Moore versus Donald Gleeson show, and I found that a little less interesting. It's got this convoluted, wildly, just extraordinarily far-fetched third act. And I mean, I know some listeners might be thinking it's a thriller, you know, and given the plot that I've mentioned so far, it's allowed to be a little bit far-fetched, but it just stretches credibility like far too much. And I also think this is becoming a bit of a problem. It's a very dark looking film, and this is becoming a really big problem with streaming, because you can see this in cinemas and you can also see it on Apple TV Plus this weekend. So it's both options are available to you. But if you notice recently with the streaming films, everything now is being shot in digital without much light.
Yeah.
So have you ever noticed that you're turning up the contrast on your television in order to see scenes that are shot in the dark or shot in the woods at night?
Yeah.
Have you ever done that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's becoming really annoying. It's like,
this is a bit like a few years ago, the thing nobody could hear dialogue properly as well.
There's a fair bit of that in here. And so it's kind of, you know, the amount of money pumped into this film, you expect it to look better. But no, look, everyone is very good in this, except for, Sydney Sweeney, you know, she is a talented actor, but
is she?
She has done some smaller independent drama. She was very good in The White Lotus, but I haven't seen anything to kind of justify the movie star hype behind her. And as I said, like, the range is tested here. Donald Gleeson, though, is enjoying himself. He doesn't get
to do stuff like that at all.
No, he got to play a villain in Star Wars for a few years, and he plays an unsavory character in the new Guy Ritchie one, Fountain of Youth. But he is working hard here. Great cast, great team behind it. It just, a kind of, it becomes, in the end, it kind of becomes one of those films that you sort of end up, you'll stick it on while you're doing something else, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't recommend you do that with any film.
No, because Donald Gleason did Fountain of Youth, now he's doing this, is kind of, do actors kind of go, I think I'll just do a few streamer films, or is that just the way the work comes in?
Got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Was it, Jodie Foster recently was saying that she can't understand how younger actors just take gigs despite the fact that the film, they know going into it that the film might be terrible. And it's like, Jodie, they have to earn money. You know, and this film is not, I lost interest in this film halfway through, but at the same time, I don't resent Donald Gleason for taking the paycheck.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, every single movie Jodie Foster has ever been in has been an exemplary work of art.
It has, no. Have you seen The Beaver?
Yeah.
Not great.
I've noticed both of those things, the brightness and the audio, says the text. Apparently it's because they're made for the big screen. And we're watching them on laptops and tablets and things.
It's because they're shooting on digital and they're skimping on lighting effects and they're skimping on actual proper lighting professionals. I don't know why they are doing that, but it's just, it's ridiculous. You can't see anything anymore.
Okay. Oh, so it's basically just a camera rather than a lighting setup.
And yeah.
I think we might fix it in the edit.
They're not lighting or blocking scenes properly anymore. And I think they also think that they're being realistic. It's like, well, okay, you can be realistic, but the audience needs to be able to see what's going on at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a streamer this weekend.
This weekend and in cinemas too.
But why would anyone bother going to a cinema to see it then? What's the point of doing that?
Cinema's alive.
Well, I know, because sometimes they put them in because they think, you know, Oscars, obviously, no one's arguing this is a contender.
But Apple do have a deal with various like distributors around the world to show their films in cinema. Like F1, for example, which is out in a couple of weeks. That's going to be in cinemas for us. But there's a deal there that it will land on Apple after like 2 months of release or something.
Yeah.
That's an even bigger one because they've spent about $250 million on that. They didn't do that on...
Yeah.
On this one.
No, I mean, you could see that. And you'd see also an F1. You might want to see that on a big screen.
Yeah.
But I'd wonder from the streamer's point of view, what's the point with a film like this of ever sticking it in the cinema?
Oh yeah, you're gonna make a loss. Like, there's probably no point.
Okay, weird. So George Clooney's bid to win an what do you get for acting on the stage?
Tony.
Tony. So the Good Night and Good Luck. It's they're going to stream it on CNN.
So yeah,
which I first thought was weird, but then I thought, that's extremely appropriate.
This is really weird because I'm very much talking in the past tense. Because unlike everything on streaming, this happened and we can't watch it. But it's fascinating, the whole situation. So George Clooney for the last couple of months has been acting in his Broadway debut in a show called Good Night and Good Luck, which is based on a movie which he starred in back in 2005. This is all about a US anchor from CBS called Edward R. Murrow. He was a very big around the 1930s and 40s as a broadcaster. You know the way the Americans in particular have a reverence about their anchormen in particular. Edward R. Murrow was one of those. And over the weekend, this Broadway show closed and the theatre took on 20-30 cameras and they broadcast it live on CNN around the world, obviously on CNN and also in America. They had an after show, pre-show kind of discussions, and the whole premise of the play is all about freedom of speech, the media, the role of the media, and the role of news and truth. The whole play and the new movie as well is also based on the topic of McCarthyism, which of course happened when Americans were very fearful of left wing and the Soviets and everything. And it was a huge success. I stumbled upon it by a couple of tweets. There's a guy called Brian Stelter, who is a media correspondent for CNN and others over there, written some amazing books about behind the scenes of TV shows and stuff. He was tweeting all about this, that this was happening. And a really remarkable broadcast. Over 7 million people watched it. Globally fantastic, but unfortunately they made the decision that it's like, this is a TV moment, you will be watching it and that's it, there's no option to catch up on
it. I would say there might be a rights issue there
could be, and I'm sure, as I usually say on these things, I'm sure if you look hard enough you could find it. The movie now, in fairness, is available to buy online and the likes, which
true.
Is great,
yeah.
But it's really worth doing it. A really wonderful production to see, but and great to see George Clooney in something a bit different.
Yeah, and he was nominated for a Tony.
He
dyed the hair and everything.
He did indeed.
For it
was a flawless performance. And Alana Glazer from Broad City was also starring in it, which was a bit of a surprise because because I'm a huge Broad City fan, the brilliant Paramount and Comedy Central programme, seeing her in a bit more of a serious role was a little bit jarring, but then by the end of it, I really enjoyed. So yeah, great watch.
One of my favourite movies, Interstellar, is really bad for the audio thing. It was great in the cinema, but I've struggled to hear it properly any time I've watched it since, says Rob. Dean says, the reason why more and more movies and series are seemingly darker is because services like Netflix and Apple TV can't detect whether your TV is HDR enabled. Most panels are sold as 4K HDR, but actually don't have the necessary panel brightness, brackets, nits, N-I-T-S.
Yeah. I was going to say all of that, obviously.
In a second now, Chris is going to explain to us what nits means. And our colour depth to display the image the way it is intended. This is why Disney Plus simply force you to watch content at 180p if your TV is only 4K, non-HDR. Well, that explains it. And sorry, streamers, we were unfairly, and filmmakers, we were unfairly judging them.
Yeah.
It's not their fault, it's our fault.
Yeah, there's videos online of Tom Cruise and Christopher McQuarrie, the director of Mission Impossible, asking or like directing viewers to certain control functions on their televisions in order to get the best picture and the best sound out of Mission Impossible. So they do care about these things. With Chris Nolan's Interstellar, Chris Nolan does that with all of his films. He intentionally dials everything up to 11 to provide what he thinks is a real life experience where everything's a bit overwhelming, a bit deafening. Because he thinks it just heightens, you know, the experience for viewers. B, because he wants you to watch it again.
Right.
Yes. And I think it's kind of clever.
What did he say there? Yeah. That's an interesting element to include into a movie. Right. You are listening to the Moncrief Show and News Talk. We do have to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. What are we having next?
We're going to have the Alpine Rift Sauvignon Blanc, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc 2024 now. Basically, people are drinking less and they're drinking better. And that's backed up by the figures. Alcohol consumption is down 34.3% since 2001. And I found some old figures going back to 2012. And while France were consuming 17 litres of alcohol, or sorry, France were consuming 45 litres per capita. We were on 17. We were the second lowest in Europe. The only one lower than us was Finland on 11 litres, right? So, you know, in terms of wine, in terms of beer, we're like top of the pops, like you wouldn't believe. But in terms of wine, you know, wine consumption isn't as enormous as people think it is, and it's dropping. So what's actually happening now is people are going out and they're drinking less and they're saying, right, let's get something that I really like. And one of the most popular, bar none, wine styles is New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. So that's why I picked this one today, because there is such a demand for it. So this is from Marlborough. The fruit comes from Rapura, Rennick and Attaware Valley, which is actually a little bit off-piste. It's just outside Marlborough. The wine is made by a guy called Richard Ellis, and he runs a company called The Marlboroughist. And he's a bit of an industry legend. He worked with two of New Zealand's best-known premium wineries, Atarangi, which is up in North Island, who are known for their Pinot Noirs, and Grey Wacky, which is Kevin Judd, who was the man who created Cloudy Bay. So, you know, Richard knows what he's doing. Chris took a little sip and went, that's lovely. That really is my review for this week. Chris, thank you for
Chris
that.
Chris likes it. That's going on the bottle now.
You know what? It's an elegant interpretation of the classic Marlborough style. You've got the nectarine aromas, a hint of mandarin, and then that lovely, crisp, almost sweet citrus finish that's just got so much appeal. What do you think, Russell?
I'm actually a big fan of this. I love, I used to be a fiend for a Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, for example, but I've gone off with that sickly sweetness. This is just a right amount of sweetness.
And it's got that light, elegant, linear elegance in there as well. You'll get this from jnwine.com. It's in Jew Divine in Port Marnock and Leonard's Fine Wine in Trim.
Are all the Sauvignon Blancs made in Marlborough?
Oh, no, there's Nelson is another region where they're mostly on South Island. North Island is more Chardonnay and various other.
I just had this impression they're renaming sections of New Zealand to Marlborough just so they can, because more people want to get into that business.
The Marlborough region, I mean, I flew in there in 2016. I was on this tiny little plane with the whirly gig and I was a bit nervous, right? And I look and like the whole valley valley. I mean, it's an old glacial river valley that's gone dry. And there was an elderly couple sitting beside me, and I said, oh my God, I wasn't expecting so many vines. And the woman looks at me and she says, well, 30 years ago, this was full of sheep and apple trees and I want them back. A bit late now, but it literally, I mean, it's really only become one of the greatest vineyard regions in the world in the last 30 years. And if it was a bit, it's literally planted to the max. There's no space left to plant anymore. And there's such a global demand for New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc that if they could expand the area and grow more of it in this, because it's designated at the specific area, you know, it's that's where it is.
Yeah.
And there's only so much of it you could produce and the world wants it. So it's one of the most famous wine styles in the world now. So Alpine Rift 2024, Richard Ellis, the Marbarist, brand new to the Irish market, and jnwine.com, and check it out.
Now, Russell, this is no doubt a completely unsubstantiated rumour, but let's pretend it's true. Coronation Street and Emmerdale are going to merge.
Allegedly. These are the rumours that were going around this week. So ITV's financial difficulties have not been kept under wraps for the last couple of months there now. They've had, there was the daytime cuts that they've been making to Good Morning Britain, Lorraine, This Morning Loose Women, over 200 jobs being cut from that. I actually used to work on those productions, so I know a lot of the people affected, and trying to get a bit of insider information. Very tight-lipped, I have to say, unfortunately. But there's now rumours from the north of England, where both Coronation Street and Emmerdale are made, that they're going to put everything into one facility. Now, you'd often see on Virgin Media and the likes of tours being run, that you get to go to both of the sets, and they're great thing. The Corrie set is great, actually, if you're ever in Manchester, just saying. And if you are interested in it, the two of them are only about 45 miles apart, very easy to get to, but the production facility in Salford is incredible, and there is a talk that they could be merging the two of them together, bringing Emmerdale and the Woolpack and everything like that over to Manchester instead. Now, it would be a bit weird because soaps are usually very much of the place that they are, so it would be a bit weird that a Yorkshire Dales based soap would be coming from the quays of Manchester instead.
They're not merging the two programmes. No, that's what I want to hear.
Now, they actually...
The sheep are running in, around Coronation Street.
Great. They are once, so there's this, again, as part of these cuts, at the moment, Coronation Street is on three nights a week for an hour, which in my opinion, as a former fan of Corrie, it's far too long. There's not enough going on in it to have 3 hours of it. I remember when it used to be 3 days a week, half an hour, you're done. Fantastic. Emmerdale's a bit, I think it's 4 days a week. In the new year, they're going to be cutting that down. And actually, they're going to do a merge episode where certain characters, and this is again going back to how we were talking at the very beginning about voting on streaming services, they've had a poll of which characters should appear, vice versa.
Fit into the wedge.
But what's fascinating is so often when someone gets killed off on Coronation Street, about 2 years later, they crop up and turn up. So the whole thing of like, if you remember, Dev Allahan had a...
Don't give us details. We don't need your life story, man. We have to get on to the film now. Sorry.
Emmerdale, it's fantastic. So I'm really hoping that they all come back together and go, I know you, don't I?
The magic. Second movie is called Echo Valley. Here's the trailer.
My father was a samurai.
You are your father's daughter.
Am I a samurai? Am I a killer? I am Tornado. Remember my name.
There you go. Chris, you've got a minute to tell us all about this film and the final... the fine nuances of the whole thing.
I'm just going to spend the talking about Corrie Dale. So we've got Tim Roth portraying this not so dandy highwayman or footpad, because apparently there's a difference. In 18th century Scotland, he's got his gang. They're vicious. They're ruthless. They've just stolen two bags of gold and they think they're on their way home. But unfortunately, Sugarman's lads, including his son, Little Sugar, played by Jack Loudon, they're not the brightest bunch. They are transporting the gold to wherever they lay their heads, and they stop to take in a travelling puppet Ultimate Samurai Show, run by a Japanese former warrior and his teenage daughter, played by Yogi, and her name is actually Koki, and her name in this film is called Tornado. Tornado is sick of her dad's business. She doesn't really understand why they're performing this silly samurai puppet show, which is actually quite effective. I'd pay to see it. But she's distracted by the sight of a child robbing the gold from these guys while they're watching the show. She catches up with the child, steals the gold for herself, but unfortunately the highwaymen catch her and a chase ensues. So the whole film is sort of this wild, violent, exciting chase where, you know, you've got the British Isles, late 18th century, you've got these vicious guys who will do anything to get their gold back, and you've got Koki, who's been learning from her father all these years with this puppet show how to look after herself with a sword. So let's just say that Jack Loudon and Tim Ross, they're going to regret chasing this person.
What streamer can people watch this on?
This is in cinemas this week. Yeah,
cinemas?
Yeah.
It's not Pitch Dark then?
It's not Pitch Dark. No. Made by John McLean, who gave us Slow West, a great western with Michael Fassbender 10 years ago. It doesn't always tell a story in a straight line. The structure is a bit discombobulated at times, but it looks fantastic. Great performances, genuinely thrilling, atmospheric. Give it a go. See it on the big screen.
All right, good stuff. Thanks to Russell Jean and Chris.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.